That's my question! The question, jerk!
Hey, listen, nerds. It's time for another Two-Headed Nerd Answer of the Week podcast with Joe and Matt.
Oh, damn. It's the question of the week. My name's Matt Baum. I'm one of the hosts of the Two-Headed Nerd comic book podcast. Across from me is the other one. His name is Joe Patrick. Say hello.
I'm watching Mabel just freak out.
She had a bath. She's going nuts today.
That's why the dogs are wet.
Yeah. When you bathe them, they go crazy. But regardless of that, let's get down to business. Business here works
like... That's why I'm here.
This is how we do business here. Every Sunday, my buddy and co-host, Joe Patrick, posts the question of the week on our THN forums. And then you guys hit us with MP3s or calls to the Ziggurat hotline, 402-819-4894. Or you go to the forums and write as much as you'd like about said question for a little segment we call the Answer of the Week. That's what we're doing now. But before we get to that, I need Joe Patrick to tell me, what was the question of the week this week?
This week's question came courtesy of our very own first time, long time.
Oh, yeah.
Who writes, retcons, reboots, reimaginings, they're nothing new.
No.
Hey, we've all seen them happen a million times in comics.
All the damn time.
What he wants to know is there a retcon, reboot, or reimagining that you ended up liking better than what came before?
So it's not just like your favorite, you got to like it even more than what was happening.
Yes.
Oof, that's tough.
Yeah.
Man. I don't know if that changes my answer. No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Okay. Let's get to it.
Well, and also, not that it's too late for people to call in, but it's not necessarily a whole reboot. It right. could be like something like, and then they revealed that so-and-so was the killer all along.
Yeah, or you not
know,
dead.
A retcon.
Or, you know, a
everything
woman.
You know, everything you knew was wrong.
Right. Like in the end of the Crying Game.
Like at the end of the Crying Game.
Yes. No one's going to understand that reference except for like the over
Jason Sachs
people.
Will.
Jason Sachs will. He's an old man. He thinks he forgot to tell us his name in this one. I feel like he didn't. Let's see what he gave us.
Hi, guys. Here with a choice that I don't think anyone else will have. I'm here to tell you about Glory. Glory was a character that came out of Rob Liefeld's section of Image Comics about 1995. She was a bad girl with a big sword and giant hair, drawn by Mike Diodato Jr. She wore an improbable, awful, stupid-looking costume that was more ass than fake boob, and she just looked hideous. It was a terrible series. Unaccountably, it lasted for about 5 or 8 years under Rob Liefeld and some other talented creators like that, and then died after 22 painful issues that can be found in quarter bins worldwide.
22 painful issues that took 8 years.
In 2012, however, Glory was brought back, and Ross Campbell and Joe Keating did the work, and it was magnificent. Glory was about war and all about the consequences of war. War devastates not just cities, towns, and people's physical lives. It also destroys people's emotions and changes people's lives. War leaves deep scars on the land, on the economy, on the body, and most importantly, on people's minds. The scars can be deep and lasting and intense and can take an extremely long time to get over. Glory is about war. But Glory isn't a total downer. Not at all. In fact, it's pretty glorious because Glory is Hey-o. About love. It's about the love between friends, the love of deeply appreciated friends who are loyal to the end. It's about the complicated, bizarre twists and turns that come from familial love. Occasionally, it's about romantic love, and there's a bit of sex thrown in for good measure, too. It's full of action, it's full of adventure, it's full of true growth in the character and her friends. Everyone just grows. The story is about transformation. Often she's in battle. Gloria, I'm talking about, transformed into an even larger, even more vicious and more horrific creature than we've seen before. That's shown with great power in a number of issues. She's a figure of sheer, piercing, dreadful wrath. But the Glory I'll remember is the woman from the final issue, who has been thoroughly beaten down by the war and her losses. I'll remember the warrior woman who finds the humanity inside herself that she had no idea she could resurrect. I'll remember the living woman who voluntarily pays Charon the ferryman to take her to hell. And most of all, I'll remember that Glory's hell is actually a kind of heaven where all her loved ones wait for her. Glory, Glory, Hallelujah. Check it out. It's in a nice hardcover edition. Joe Keating and Ross Campbell's Glory. It's magnificent. It's my favorite retcon.
Jason Sachs gushing. Gushing.
He definitely did not identify himself.
He did not. He forgot.
That's okay. He's passionate. He does not have time.
I also really enjoyed that Glory run.
I did too.
It was really good.
I fell behind and lost track of it, but I'd love to revisit it.
That was the first time we met Joe Keating, right?
Nah, he's been around for a long time.
But didn't you just do like some, just a couple shorts or
indie
something?
Indie and image stuff. No. Okay. He had another book called Hell Yeah.
Wasn't he just like an idiot before that? No, Hell Yeah came afterwards.
I don't think that's the first time we've seen Joe Keating. Huh. No.
Okay.
Next call.
We go to the voicemail from Lincoln.
Wisdom.
I think it is. I think we've got a steady caller in her now. I love it. She's over it. She stopped throwing up and shaking. Stage fright's gone. Good for you.
Hello, nerds. Looks like it's that time again. Answer of the week time. I'm Elise Wisdom. Let's do this. For this week's question, I have four words for you. Genius, billionaire, playboy, philanthropist. Now join me as I tell you a story. A story that takes us back in time and does contain cursing. So Matt, you have been warned.
Thank you.
The year was 2008, and I was living in Los Angeles, California, working in a movie theater and questioning my recent life decisions to move to L.A. and work in a movie theater, when I saw the first trailer for Iron Man and the posters started showing up at work. I knew the name Iron Man, but not much else. I grew up on X-Men and Justice League cartoons, and while I knew about the Avengers and Captain America and the Hulk, Iron Man just wasn't on my radar. As the release date approached, coworkers and managers prepared for opening night like Walmart employees prepare for Black Friday. Rumors started circulating in the storage rooms and in hushed whispers over boxes of Red Vines and M&Ms that Jon Favreau would be there, or maybe even Robert Downey Jr. himself. Opening night was a midnight show at the Cinerama Dome, Google it, and by some small miracle, I got out of working that shift and managed to score tickets. I'm settling into my seat, getting ready for some hyped-up superhero action, when sure enough, Jon Favreau walked in front of the screen and said, "Hello, I'm Jon Favreau." 868 people lost their goddamn minds. Then he said this was supposed to be the opening show, but they added an 8 p.m. show last minute. So you guys are not the first. 868 people booed Jon Favreau. Then he said, "I know, and I feel really bad about it. So to make it up to you, here's Robert Downey Jr."
Whoa!
Cue pandemonium. He came out wearing a purple suit, looking fantastic and hamming it up. He told us to stick around after the show for something extra, a command that we would obey. You'd think that it would be impossible to top that, but you'd be wrong. Cut to 126 minutes of C4 being punched into my skull and blowing my f***ing mind. When it ended, Robert Downey Jr. declared, "I am Iron Man." And an army of nerds lost their in a standing ovation, but we did not leave because Tony Stark told us not to. It was then that we retreated to Samuel L. Jackson, introducing himself as Nick Fury and announcing the Avengers. I'm surprised the theater didn't turn into a parking lot after a Lakers game, but luckily for Pacific Theaters, most nerds lack the physical strength to flip cars or rip out theater seats. After that day, Iron Man became a household name. Every kid dresses him for Halloween, and I had my all-time favorite superhero movie. Some people flat me when I say that and tell me Dark Knight is better, but I don't care. I like Iron Man. I'm not sorry. Wisdom out. Eat it.
A lot of attitude coming there.
I love Elise. She's the best.
I do too. Elise loves what Marvel movies did to Tony Stark, and I do too.
Totes.
I do too.
100% agree.
All right. Randy Andrews.
Real quick. You are not entirely incorrect about Joe Keating. Before Glory and before Hell Yeah, he did little things here and there.
I didn't think
probably
so.
Backups.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, it's probably. I think it's safe to say that that's probably among his first
like monthly schedule
regular book. Gig.
Okay, eat and die, Joe Patrick.
Listen, I am big enough to admit that I've been wrong.
Randy Andrews shoots us an MP3.
Greetings, Joe and Matt. This is Randy Andrews emailing in for the question of the week.
Sounds mellow this week.
This week, you asked, is there a retcon, reboot, or reimagining that you liked better than the previous versions, and why? I had a really hard time with this question because I don't know of a lot of retcons or reboots or reimaginings.
I don't know what's about to happen, but I'm into it.
I thought about it a lot. And even though I really love the Gen 13 original comic, I actually like the reboot it went through when it covered the series in a succinct manner, down to four trades, instead of having different trades all over the place and not being consistent. Gen 13 really holds a special place in my heart, and when it was rebooted, I was excited for new story, new art. It's great too. It's succinct, precise, and not almost 80 issues without hardly any consistent trades. So, really, that's my answer. Gen 13. I know, guys, it's old school, but I still like it. That's my answer this week, guys. Hope you like it. Check out my soundtrack blog at soundtrackalley.blogspot.com. And my music this week, guys, is from Young Justice, off the album Secret Identity by the Andrew Allen Trio. That's it, guys, and see you in a week. Bye for now.
So
I think he means there was the Wildstorm revival under DC.
Yeah.
When Wildstorm was still being published by DC, and I think Gail Simone wrote Gen 13 for a minute.
Maybe. That sounds familiar.
They relaunched that, and they relaunched, I want to say,
wasn't Gary Frank on that too for a little bit?
Gary Frank drew Gen 13 during the original run.
So would this have been 2002 DC Comics? Yeah, maybe.
No. This would have been after 2007.
That was Chris Claremont. That was terrible. I remember that.
This would have been after 2007.
So 2006, I think. Gail Simone and Talent Caldwell.
Oh, yeah, that's the one. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, 40 issues.
Oh, man.
39, it stopped.
Surprised.
There you go.
Yeah, because it was still being published when A Legend opened in 2007, so.
Yeah, I recall this.
Yeah.
I recall this. Okay, counts.
So, it was a true reboot, because I think at that point, the Wildstorm universe had already been.
Something happened.
Flushed down the toilet for some reason.
Yeah, something definitely happened.
Like, the continuity was not the same within Wildstorm.
I had bailed at that point. So I wasn't really paying attention, but that was right about the time. Was that when
they did that Stormwatch book too?
Yeah, Stormwatch PhD, yeah. Which was just terribly named. Dr. Stormwatch.
No, it's Post-Human Division.
Yeah, I know, but it was just a terrible name. And that was pretty good, as I recall. I liked that one.
All right, Randy.
Okay.
I get it.
All right.
That's a fair answer.
Good call, Randy. Brian Domingos. Short and sweet, 120. God damn, Brian. Love it. Love it when you do this.
I think there's nothing better than a good retcon fitting together some histories that didn't make sense or fleshing things out, going backwards, going forwards, figuring out all the different parts. That is part of the fun of the serialized storytelling. But I think the number one thing that I can think of where an idea where a writer and artist took general concepts and wove them together, use legacy and use new characters with old characters and new relationships and pulled them all together and revamped bad guys into good guys, gave all these people connectivity that didn't really exist before, gave a purpose to all of them and made them all infinitely more interesting because now they are related in some way. And that is, of course, James Robinson Starman, because he took characters like Will Payton and Prince Gavin, and he took Ted Knight, created this new character in Jack, and gave this whole history 90s revamp character, and gave him decades and decades and decades of history automatically in this legacy that's so important, and Ted is so important, and you weave in a little bit of Doc Midnight, and you've got the Shade and this whole city, and he really made the best of a shared universe and picking and choosing. Such a brilliant idea, and he did it so perfectly, and that is my answer almost always.
Brian Domingos trying to push Joe Patrick's buttons.
He succeeded.
Yeah.
Brian Domingos, the second person this week that has failed to identify themselves.
Yes.
And he said his email.
Don't forget to tell us your name.
Look, it's okay. We've got your name on your email.
And
if
I get it.
You sent your own MP3.
Right. Otherwise,
if you called the hotline, who the f- No.
Yeah, you could be a mystery man.
Brian, you're the best, buddy.
Yeah, and you know how
that's
much
all I have to say about
you
that.
Know how much we love it. That's good answer. Real solid answer. Back to the phone lines.
Hey, guys. Dwight from Chicago. What the answer to this week's question of the week. What is my favorite retcon and why? After giving it a lot of thought, I have to go with the latest incarnation of Captain Marvel, Shazam. It has been a wild ride on the second story in Justice League when it first came out. The way they've reinterpreted the character, his powers, the Captain Marvel family, the whole thing has just been spot on. And they need to hurry up and get a Captain Marvel series on the New 52 ASAP. All right, that's got to be under my 3 minutes. Talk to you next week. Later, guys.
Dwight, you're back. Sorry about last week. We don't know what happened with the...
It was weird.
It was a blank voicemail. Totally dead silent.
Good to hear from you again. That's a solid answer. And Dwight, you were 2 minutes under your 3 minutes. I can't tell you how happy that makes me. I love short calls.
And you know what? I really did enjoy the new take on Shazam.
I have not read it.
I really hate that they're calling him Shazam and not Captain Marvel.
Yeah, that's dumb.
But that's the old nerd in me just being picky.
It's dumb.
It's not any dumber than calling him Captain Marvel. It's neither one is more dumb than the other, but...
It's like if they called the Thundercats Ho. You know, like that's a thing that he yells.
Like, you know? I mean, I get why they did it. They're trying to build up the character. They right. obviously knew that they wanted to get a movie made, which is happening. And they can't call it Captain Marvel because that's already...
Of course. I get it.
A thing.
I get it.
So, Dwight, great answer.
Gregory Litchfield, the THN old-timer. We haven't heard from him for a while.
He's back.
Good to have you back, buddy.
Greetings, two-headed nerds. This is your number one true believer, Greg Litchfield, and the official THN old-timer. My answer to the question... Are there any retcons, reboots, or reimaginings that I actually liked more than the previous version is? No! With that out of the way, I have just enough time to board my PC-powered Pado Stratocaster and travel to the vast expanse of cyber podcast space to answer all the questions from the past 7 episodes of Answer of the Week in the tradition of Joe and Matt's Ludicrous Speed Round!
I love this!
Ludicrous Speed!
My first impression of Gotham was not good. I disliked the overacting and general gloomy atmosphere and gave it a hearty Bat-nerd thumb down. I watched the pilot episode of Constantine with dread and was rewarded by one of the worst episodes of TV I've ever had the displeasure to pursue. It demonstrated a complete lack of respect for the source material and turned the premise into a pervasive, passive, paranormal piss pot. How long am I willing to wait for a late comic? And is there such a thing as too long? As a fan of independent and self-published comics since the black and white boom of the early 80s, I've had some mighty long waits between issues of comics. The simple answer is that if the story and creators are of high enough caliber, then no wait is too long. I can always go back to my long boxes, pull out the last few issues before the delay, and skim through them to refresh my poor old-timery memory. My favorite analogs for iconic DC and Marvel characters, or themes, were done in the pages of Kurt Busiek and Brett Anderson's Astro City. Just two of the characters and groups that come to mind are Samaritan, a super powerful hero, an obvious Superman analog, and the First Family, a family of interdimensional explorers and superheroes who are an analog of the Fantastic Four. The creator's love for iconic superheroes shows in every issue of Astro City. My favorite comic book artist that started out imitating a well-known artist is Barry Windsor Smith. When Barry Smith broke into comics with Marvel, he was given work due to his Jack Kirby-esque style, as his first published art on X-Men number 53 in 1969 clearly demonstrate. It wasn't until he began penciling Conan the Barbarian in 1970 that his art began to evolve into the masterful work it is today. My favorite weird comic, which I think would make a great TV series, is Mad Men. Mad Men was created by writer and artist Mike Allred in 1990. Frank Einstein, who was reanimated by Dr. Flem and Dr. Beaufoyd, wore a costume initially to hide his blue skin, metal scalp plate, and crisscross scars. Frank as Mad Men uses his supernatural reflexes and precognitive and empathetic powers to help Earthlings and aliens alike. Saving the best for last, I love love Flash the TV series and think it is the best superhero to TV translation to date.
There you go, Matt and Joe. This is Greg Litchfield saying, enough
said! That was an info dump. That's what that was.
We did not add that music.
No, Greg
found it. He did that on his own.
Excellent job, Greg. I've been totally impressed.
That was awesome.
I didn't know anybody was paying this close of attention.
I mean, I list all the songs in the show notes, so it's there.
It's true.
I don't think anybody reads the show notes.
No, he even edited it like close to the way I edited it. That was amazing.
Well done, sir.
Thank you much.
The bottom line, though, Greg doesn't give a shit about reboots.
No, he's not in.
He doesn't want them.
First time, long time, answering his own question. I like that.
Brace yourselves.
I like the spirit.
Brace yourselves.
Hello, two-headed dudes. So, first time, so long time. Totally had a call in this week.
Ninja Turtle.
Two reasons. One, this question was totally righteous. From a super sweet dude. Number two is, I think I have an answer that is so awesome. All right. So for my favorite that is totally better than the original is dude came out in the '80s. He was so cool. Stood toe to toe with the heroes, stood toe to toe against the villains. He was super righteous. The dude in gold. Booster Gold. Man, I totally love that dude. When he came out, he was awesome. And then, like, he had stuff with him in Justice League, and then he partnered up with Ted Kord. Oh, man, the blue and gold. Dude, their adventures are so sweet, man. Love those dudes. Then, like, Booster was a douche, man. He was a corporate stooge with labels and logos all over his uniform and his outfit. Oh, not righteous. Then he like had this thing where it happened where he was in the league, then he was not in the league, then they wanted him in the league and they didn't want him in the league. And 52 happens, man. 52 set Booster back on the righteous path. He comes back. He was in 52, not new 52, the weekly 52. He was in there twice. Not like two issues, dudes. No, he was in there as himself, as two different people, but it's him.
It's true.
Oh, but it wasn't him. He was Supernova. Spoilers! But he comes back from the future to the present to let him know, to help him progress. And then that foundation was helping that to defeat Skeets, Twisted Skeets. It was Mr. Mind. And holy cow, man.
Oh, shit.
Brain warp. Oh. Then, after all that happened, they relaunch Booster Gold. Oh. He had to be the hero. And no one knew he was the hero. The one he always wanted to be. Totally righteous. But he couldn't let anyone know. He still had to be the douche that everyone thought he was. That's my answer, dudes. Booster Gold. All right, later.
Keanu Reeves loves Booster Gold. We started off shaking our heads like, wait a minute, dude. But he got there.
He told the story, yeah.
Yeah, he got there.
I love that version of Booster Gold where, you know, he's done being a corporate jackass and he's saving the time stream, but nobody knows it.
And when was this?
The Greatest Hero You've Never Heard Of. This was immediately following 52, the conclusion of 52.
Okay.
And he was like working with Rip Hunter and right. They were going around like correcting errors in the time stream. And he kept going back over and over and over trying to save Batgirl from the Joker.
Right.
But he just couldn't. Yeah. It's a good run.
Yeah.
It's a good book.
52 was fun.
Well, this was in Booster Gold, the ongoing series, I did also enjoy 52.
Yeah.
It got a little crazy.
Yeah. It ended
but
a little weird.
I did enjoy 52. Yes, it was by far the most successful weekly series DC has done in quite some time.
Or ever, let's say.
Though I don't think Batman Eternal is that bad.
It's okay, but it's losing me. Like, it's just getting silly.
I read it in 15-issue chunks, apparently. It'll be 3 months gone and then be like, oh, yeah, Batman Eternal. And then I'll sit down and read it.
It's getting a little silly for me. But that's a whole nother question. Best weekly series. Maybe we'll have to do that sometime. Andrew Blazer.
Aren't that many to choose from.
Well, you know, of the four. Andrew Blazer hits us under 2 minutes. Nice job, son. Nice job.
Hey, Joe and Matt, this is Andrew Blazer calling in for the answer of the week. This week, we're talking about retcons. First off, I'd like to say the worst retcon ever is Gwen Stacy having sex with Norman Osborn.
Oh,
but my favorite retcon came as part of the DC Zero Hour event. This event had plenty of problems with it and eventually would be rewritten again with Infinite Crisis. But the one part that I liked about this was the reimagining of Batman's origin so that Batman never caught or confronted his parents' killer instead of the killer being Joe Chill. And I like the idea of Bruce Wayne as Batman so much more when he doesn't know who his parents' killer is, trying to get revenge for their wrongful murder. The fact that they made the killer anonymous again made him more of a symbol for Batman's crusade. I especially don't like how after Infinite Crisis, Joe Chill is caught the same night and arrested by the cops. Why would Bruce Wayne spend his life as Batman when his parents' murderer is caught the same night that they're murdered? It doesn't make as much sense to me. My vision of Batman is this tortured soul who's always haunted by the injustice of his parents' murder, and having a person that he or the police could punish and get justice, it just lessens it for me. It makes it less special. But like I said, in the Infinite Crisis, they brought Joe Chill back, and I believe he's present in the New 52. But fortunately, there was about a 10-year window there from 95 to about 2005 where Thomas and Martha Wayne's killer was anonymous, and I like that way more. So once again, this is Andrew Blazer. Thanks for taking my call. We'll see you next week.
I totally agree. Having Joe Chill get arrested, stupid. Because then he's brought to justice. Then like the whole crusade is out there. Having him out on the loose, never brought to justice, that's what fuels Batman.
We're talking about two different interpretations of Batman,
right?
And I think that there is a place for both. The murderer never being caught is certainly what fuels the more grim Avenger kind of Batman, but
way more compelling.
But I also really love, you know, the detective superhero Batman, like from the 70s and 80s, where it's like, his parents' killer was brought to justice, but that doesn't mean he's still not out for justice. He's not out for revenge.
I liked it better but it wasn't even like a revenge thing. It was just more like,
he's looking for vengeance.
The police can't do the job.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do the job that they are incapable of doing.
Right, but Batman caught his own parents. No. Whatever he's talking about after Infinite Crisis, I don't exactly recall. But in the in the pre-crisis DC universe, Batman learns that Joe Chill killed his parents, and he finds him and he reveals himself. He says, "You killed my parents, and you're the reason that I became Batman. Me, Bruce Wayne." And he takes his cowl off and he's like, "It's me." And Joe Chill freaks out. He's like, "What? Oh no." And he runs away, and he immediately runs into the hideout where his friends are laying low. He's like, "You guys are never going to believe this. Batman just like tracked me down and said, I'm the reason he became Batman because I killed his mom and dad." And of course, before he can say, "And his name is Bruce Wayne," they're like, "You did what? Murder." And they killed Joe Chill. So Batman did track him down and solve the case, but he was murdered before he could be brought to justice.
Brutal. Brutal bummer.
In the pre-crisis DC universe,
so Batman was just like, "I'm Batman, Bruce Wayne. Now get out of here, Joe Chill. Take off."
I have to wonder what Batman
better run.
What Batman's end game was going to be. Was he going to take him to jail?
Yeah.
And say, "Here he is. Here's Joe Chill. He killed the Waynes," and just expect Joe Chill to stay quiet?
I think he was going to push his thumbs into his eyes and bash his skull open, Game of Thrones style. Like, you know, Batman.
I love the pre-crisis DC universe.
I know you do. It's a wacky place, man. It was a wacky place.
I love other stuff better, and we're going to talk about it.
We'll get there. First,
Andy, great call.
Yeah,
I love it.
I love good Batman discussion. Shonix, I don't have a slightest clue what he's going to say.
Me neither.
Hello, Twitter nerd, Sean.
He's probably going to be mad, though, because we always
think he's going to be mad. I'm mad, and I'm not going to take it any longer.
Yeah!
I'm not mad.
I've been waiting for that dude to explode.
I'm so mad all the time, Matt. I'm kind of a laid-back kind of guy. I think you want me to be mad.
I'm just trying to fire you up, Sean.
Then I'm going to mention Wildcats 3.0. Well, that's the only time I'm going to. I'm not going back to the well. I'm going back to the sewers with TMNT from ID Dubs. That's right. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Eastman, Waltz, and Duncan, about 39 issues ago, reintroduced the turtles to me after many other reintroductions over the years and really won me over. I'm a huge turtle fan now. I love them. You know, I have to admit, I enjoyed the movie, but they were the best thing of that movie. The only good thing about that movie, because they really hit the family aspect. And I think the series now hits that totally. From the get-go, they were tracking down Raph because he wasn't originally with the team. They were all wearing their red masks, and I thought that was great because I didn't really care for the color ones from the cartoon and the Archie books or the movies. But then when they found Raph, they all got their colors, and now I don't care anymore. I like the colored ones because there was a story to it. And that's what Eastman, Waltz, and I think Bobby Kernow has came on out later to do help with some of the writing duties. They've really brought that family aspect and really just solidified it. It's really fun to read now. I had fun back in the Mirage days, but this is just a lot of fun. It's fun to wait for these new characters to come in. It's fun to see the old ones come into the fold. It's neat to see how that world is together. And then not to mention, you know, the annuals done by Eastman with his pencils, and they're done in black and white. It's just such a great callback to the original series. And then you have the micro series, the crossovers, the one with Ghostbusters currently is fantastic. The first issue was anyway, the H.P. Lovecraft one with Donatello done by Andy Kuhn. Fantastic too. Highly recommend ID Dubs, TMNT. I love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love
it. You watching porn?
MC Mikey.
This is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I guess. All right. Okay. Sean,
learn to have some fun, will you?
Sold me on the TMNT relaunch. I wasn't heavy into it, and he told me to stick with it and give it a few more tries, and I ended up really enjoying a lot of it.
And I've never read it.
It's pretty good.
I've never read it.
Yeah, IDW.
I want to read it.
IDW does a really good job with their licensed titles, and TMNT is definitely one of them. He was right. That's a good answer.
It's on the list.
And he loves it. He's been studying, man. That's cool. Go back to the phone lines here.
Hey, John, Matt, BJ from Detroit. Love to edit nerd. Great show. I've been thinking about calling in, but no questions really tickled my fancy. I've been stuck on this long drive across Michigan here. I was thinking about this week's question. I got to say, the part that stuck out to me was the reimagining line. A little background on myself. I'm a huge Marvel guy, huge Image guy, and I really can't stand DC. And I get a lot of flack for it, but the real reason I don't like DC is because Superman, the one unbeatable guy, and the only thing that'll kill him is a little bit of Krypton, I don't buy it. However, when I think about the best, the most well-written, and the most enjoyable, rereadable book that I've ever read, it has to be Red Sun. Red Sun was beautiful. I mean, it just flips the coin, and the whole world gets turned upside down. You have a reimagining of Lex Luthor, of Lois Lane, of Batman, of Superman. You have the perfect tear down and re-envisioning of two characters. In this case, I'm specifically speaking about the struggle between Batman and Superman, which in essence are the heart of both of those characters, but they're done in such a way that it puts a unique spin and a completely different look at it. And it pulls on the Cold War ties that I think puts a great element into it. You know, it puts it all in Russia, which I think is awesome. The whole premise and run story. And then not only that, the ending. The ending, it just boggles my mind. First time I read it, my was blown. And I gotta say, if you really want to do credit to a comic, the one that I dislike the most in regular canon happens to be the one that I'm most interested in a reimagine. So I hope that helps you guys out a little bit here. I'd like to hear your thoughts on it. Keep it real, guys. Bye.
DJ, welcome aboard.
Yeah, right.
He's a no guy from Detroit, and I can appreciate that. Detroit's a hard-ass town, man. I love Detroit. That's a great answer, too. Mark Millar's...
We got RoboCop there, keeping it real.
That's right. Mark Millar's Red Sun. Good answer.
Yeah, yeah. So he went with more of an Elseworlds-y kind of thing. A reimagining, for sure.
Totally counts.
Red Sun is really good.
Yeah, totally counts.
I like it.
The Comrade Batman. Oh, man.
Yeah.
That was so cool.
Fun fact, I actually, because of the crippling lateness of Superman Red Sun when it came out in issue form, I had only ever read the first two. So it wasn't until like this year that I actually read the end of Superman Red Sun.
I waited a really long time as well.
And the ending is bonkers. It's awesome.
You know what? I bought like a really nice hardcover of it when it, I can't remember if it was reissued a few years back, and I didn't realize that I never finished it.
Yeah, neither did I.
Because it was like a year later.
It was really late. And a different artist too.
Yeah.
At the end. But yeah. It's a great ending. I really like Superman Red Sun. I appreciate that answer.
That's an awesome answer. Go back to the phone lines here.
Don't be a stranger, buddy.
Yeah. Keep calling, man. Love it.
Oh, it's short and sweet. John from Jersey.
Look at John from Jersey. Did this in 22 seconds. I love it.
Oh, it's not John.
How you doing, Matt? This is Hutch.
Oh,
New Jersey. Hutch. The other John in New Jersey. I'm also John, but everyone, I'm Hutch. It's fine. The correct answer is Miracle Man. That's it. It's Miracle Man. I don't have to justify it. That's the correct answer. Okay, toodles.
Alan Moore's Miracle Man.
Yes, a reimagining of what was certainly a... unsubtle homage to Captain Marvel.
Right.
Let's be generous and call it that.
Hutch, you are not wrong in saying that that is the correct answer.
You are not wrong in saying that that is a reimagining of Miracle Man.
Yes. I think it's a very solid answer.
Listen, man, I don't want to let him get a big head. We're in charge, not him.
I understand. Hutch, sorry we called you John.
His name is John.
Even though your name is John, you'll always be Hutch to us. Thank you, buddy, for your call. There's a reason why I put the fear of God into them. Carl Smith does it in 1:48, half the time. Nice job, Carl.
Hey, fellas, it's Carl Smith calling in with my answer for the question of the week about the three R's. I've lost track of which volume Incredible Hulk is on now, but bear with me as I try to fumble through this. There was a recent reboot, and I think... Wills might have even done the art on it, where we start off with Hulk as like the champion defender of the mole people in the subterranean lairs and fighting enormous monsters
that kind
of threaten their way of life. And but he's kind of withdrawn from them, so he's kind of like this legendary titan of a figure. That lasted for about half an issue before they drug him up to the surface and pretty much ruined that storyline for me. But as far as reboots and reimagings go, I mean, that was sort of a hard one because it didn't really slide into it. It just kind of started the new numbering, as Marvel does, at number one, and here he was living, you know... with the mole people and doing their dirty work, and they worshiped him like a demigod. And I love that Hulk. I wish that Hulk would have lasted for at least the 12 issues that most Marvel reboots get. I would like to see him go back to that. That's the Hulk I like, a monster fighting monsters. There's a heart in there somewhere, but he can't quite get to it. And none of this, him fighting Red Skull's daughter mess, or him fighting Banner, who's been separated from him. The Hulk has been almost all but ruined for me, but that was a moment where I thought some new life had been breathed into him, and I loved it. Thanks.
Hulk has been kind of a hot mess. It's like they're not sure what they want to do with him.
I agree with that statement.
Yeah, yes. I didn't mind the Mark Waid thing when he was like Hulk Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. and like...
Yeah, Indestructible Hulk. Yeah. I liked that run a lot.
I thought that was pretty cool, but it's not something they can do forever, obviously.
And they didn't.
Yeah, and they certainly didn't. I don't know. I think they're just trying to figure out what the hell they're going to do with the Hulk.
I honestly have no idea. I have no recollection what was going on with the Hulk before they launched that run with Jason Aaron and Will Spataccio. Oh, Red Hulk was the book. Red Hulk was the book at the time.
Yeah.
And then Red She-Hulk took it over.
Ugh. Poor Jeff Parker got assigned that piece of shit. It was terrible. Ugh.
Yeah, I remember because he was writing the Hulk book at the time, and it was actually not too bad.
No, it was all right.
But it was Red Hulk, and you know, nobody likes cared. Red Hulk. You know who likes the Red Hulk? Not even Jeff Parker.
Yeah, nobody does.
That might not be true, but...
Camarillo, love hearing from you, buddy. I agree. That was an interesting thing they did with the Hulk for a few minutes there. But, man, I could not get into Wills's art. It's just gotten so bizarre.
Yeah, it's true.
I can't handle it. Everyone, like people that are sitting down having a cup of coffee, look like they're writhing in pain. You know, it's just bizarre. So favorite call,
man, I am torn because there were several calls that I really loved, but I narrowed it down to Elise Wisdom's.
That was great
because she told a wonderful story.
Yeah, she took us there.
And Greg Litchfield, who obviously was trying to emulate his idols.
I'm going for Litchfield because he made up for 7 weeks.
I know.
It was awesome.
In 3 minutes.
It was awesome.
I presume it was 3 minutes.
It was 3 minutes.
But I mean, but how can I not at least consider Brian Domingos for the Starman answer?
Well, I almost feel like we should take that one off the board for you. Like, it's not fair. He's right. We both agree.
So here's where I'm going to split hairs. If I'm going to say my favorite answer, it's Brian Domingos.
Okay.
But my favorite call, I think, is Elise.
Okay.
Because she told a story.
She took
and she really painted a picture.
I felt it. I was there with her.
I did. It's like I was in that theater.
I was sitting right next to her.
Trying but failing to rip up a theater seat because I'm a weak nerd.
That's fair. Let's talk about ours.
Go
favorite
for it.
Retcon, reboot.
Go ahead. Get right on into it.
I had trouble with this one, and I kind of can't believe that nobody picked it up. Part of me wanted to say Geoff Johns, Hawkman. Because I think Geoff Johns had one of the most difficult jobs in comics, making that character make any sense whatsoever.
Totally agree.
And I really liked that run. Even when Palmiotti and Gray took it over, it was still great.
Yes. Right up
super
until...
Super violent.
You know what? Stop reading that, Hawkman, at issue 49.
Yeah.
You can go because ahead then
and stop.
It becomes Hawk Girl by Howard Jenkins, and it's awful.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that soured me on it, and that's why I'm not giving it the answer. I think... And I can't believe nobody else said this one. I'm going with Brandon Graham's Prophet. I love Prophet and what they did with this nothing throwaway, stupid character.
I mean, you're right there with Jason Saxis from the same.
Yeah, he was doing Glory.
Line of reboots.
I'm going with Prophet just because it was so creative and they really didn't do much different. They just took the character and sort of dropped him into the wild, bizarre, psychedelic sci-fi setting, you know, like maybe millions of years in the future. I'm not even sure.
And I mean, far enough that like there are no humans, right?
Every issue was so good. So good. And populated with some of the best artists working right now that normally you would never think of some of these guys drawing sci-fi. You just wouldn't think of it. And I don't like you. There's no way they'd get a job at Marvel DC drawing a sci-fi book. But Image was like, man, get weird. Let's go. Let's get super weird with this. And I adore that book. I really do. It's ending real quick here.
I don't think it's completely going away.
No, the series is ending. Yeah. And I think they're going to do some mini series with it. So cool.
Just hopefully they keep it going.
Fantastic reboot and like true reboot where they're just like, all right, do whatever you want with it. Go nuts. And they went as nuts as they possibly could.
Yeah. And I got to give credit to the Rob for that because obviously, he must have had the final say on that stuff.
I assume so. I don't know.
I mean, those are his characters.
But I assume so.
He owns them. And so he's the one that said, I trust you. Go ahead.
Do
it. He may have even picked the creators for all we know. I don't really know.
I don't think that. I think that was more like Eric Stevenson and.
But Image doesn't do that. Image is just the publisher. They're not editorial.
No, I think so, like somebody came to them, like Graham and Keating, I think, came to them with the ideas and said, look, we want to do these books. And they were like, kick ass, do it. Let's talk to Rob, make sure it's cool, and let's do it. As I recall, we reported on it a long time ago.
No, we didn't.
Yeah,
we did not report anything.
Millions of years ago.
We did not report on like the secret history of the Extreme Universe reboot.
No, that we just talked about it as a news story. when it was coming.
Well, anyway, regardless, whoever came up with the idea, whoever allowed it, it was a genius move because that created some really great comics.
Absolutely. I'd love to see more stuff like that.
Yeah.
Joe totally. Patrick, what's your answer?
Okay, so I knew my answer immediately. I didn't even have to think about it. First Time, Long Time did not necessarily specify, you know, what character, what rebooted character. Like, a reboot can be, or a reimagining or a retcon, they could be more of an abstract thing, like Norman Osborn reimagined as Gwen Stacy's baby daddy.
So sexy.
You know, or...
How could she resist those cornrows?
Right. Sad, but powerful. That was something that was actually in the book.
Yeah.
The rumor that was going around that they were going to do a retcon where Uncle Ben was...
Oh, God. Child
molester? Molesting Peter.
Yeah.
It turned out to be nothing. I think actually the rumor was Marvel was going to drop this huge bomb.
Right.
And it was going to be like the biggest news to date and blah, blah, blah. And of course, the rumor mill somehow latched onto Uncle Ben, child molester.
Well, there was something to it in the sense that like there was a script that was kicked around and Marvel was like, no, we're not doing that.
But I think the rumor that was revealed ended up being truth. The Kyle Baker truth.
Oh, wasn't it?
Where they introduced the idea that Captain America was not the first Captain America.
Oh, okay. I thought this was when they ended the marriage.
No, gosh, no. This was before that. Oh, this was before that.
All right.
Anyway, so...
And I think that issue was called... That story was called Truth.
That's racist.
No, that's what it was called. Truth.
It's racist.
T-R-O-O-F.
You continuing to explain it doesn't make it any better.
Truth!
My immediate response was to say that my favorite... reboot of all time is the post-crisis DC universe, the reboot that brought Earth 2 and Earth 1 together and unified all those elements that had been scattered in a multiverse and kind of floating independently of one another. It's the reboot that actually created the DC legacy.
Yeah,
right. That it did not really exist except for in pockets. Like on Earth 2, you had the legacy because the JSA had retired and then they had kids and Infinity right. Inc. But that was it. That it stops there. But Crisis brought it all together into the same stew. And I really, really loved that. And that's where I went from a DC, somebody that liked DC books to an actual DC fanatic.
Yeah, and post-crisis is probably the DCU that you and I, that everybody our age grew up with.
Yes, I would agree.
Learned to love DC Comics after that.
But if I was going to dial down to a specific character reboot, it would be the post-crisis Superman. That is the thing that I loved the most about the Crisis reboot. The post-crisis Superman created by John Byrne was more human. He was the version of Superman that viewed himself as human first and alien second, right?
Definitely.
Prior to that, in the pre-crisis universe, Clark Kent was a mask that he wore, a character that he made up so that he could interact.
It was just a secret.
And when he went to his Fortress of Solitude, not his apartment, not his parents' house, the Fortress of Solitude full of alien animals and robots.
Right.
That's when he could really let his hair down and be himself. So the pre-crisis Superman was Kal-El, alien visitor, protector of Earth. The post-crisis Superman was Clark Kent, farm boy from Kansas, who finds out when he's a teenager that he's an alien god.
Yeah.
And I love that. It grounds that character so much more and makes him relatable. And that's what...
Something they need to get back to. Big time.
And, you know, they've danced around it and done different versions. Grant Morrison's All-Star Superman is much closer to the pre-crisis version.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But he still has that heart that I don't think Superman really had until after the crisis.
Yeah, that's a fantastic answer.
And so for me, you know, BJ or PJ or DJ, I'm sorry, it was a little fuzzy. I didn't catch his actual initials. Yeah.
Oh, DJ.
Was it DJ?
Yeah, it was
I see.
DJ.
I just couldn't quite hear it. What DJ was saying about Superman being boring and the kind of guy that's unbeatable and all you need is a little rock. That's not the point of Superman. The point of Superman is not watching him fight. It's not going, oh man, I hope he beats the toy man.
Yeah.
It's Superman interacting with the world and how he is trying to better the world.
The decisions that Superman's gonna make.
The villains and how the villains hate him for what he wants to do and for what he represents.
Right.
And the idea that he's got to fight somebody and punch their lights out is secondary to me. And I think writers too easily get away from that.
Yeah.
And that leads us to bad Superman stories.
Good answer, Joe Patrick. That's a really good answer. I didn't see that one coming from you. I thought you were going to go post-crisis DC and just say, that's my dog.
Well, I wanted to get specific.
Yeah, that's what I did too. Because there were other things that, you know, I freaked out about and loved, but I wanted to localize it to one character.
Sure, sure.
So, a lot of fun this week. One new caller. DJ, loved hearing from you. Hope to hear from you again. We've got another question that just went up. Joe Patrick, tell them what it is.
This week's question comes courtesy of Lord Stephen Fino, our master of coin, who wants to know, what is your favorite appearance by a major character in a Fringe book? For example, you've got Ms. Marvel tooling around in the Marvel Universe doing her own thing, and all of a sudden Wolverine's there.
Right.
Right? Steven's example was Hitman 34, where Tommy Monahan meets Superman.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to go into any more detail because I'm sure Steven will call in. That's the question.
It's a great question. It's going to take a little bit of homework, but you guys can do it.
It is. It is. I'm not really sure what my answer is.
Let's get nerdy. Let's dig into it. Let's really think about it. It's going to be fun, guys. Of course, we want to thank everybody one more time for all your calls. This is your show, and you guys are what makes it great. If you are like DJ and you've been thinking about calling, call us, man. Send us an MP3. We want to hear from you.
And
this is your show.
If you haven't called in because you haven't necessarily thought the questions tripped your trigger, go to the forums and suggest one.
That's right.
That's what they're there for.
Suggest a question that you want to answer. We would love it.
Or email it to us, whatever.
Or email it to us, yeah. We'll have another episode of the Two-Headed Nerd hitting this weekend. It's going to be totally f***ing awesome. Probably the best one yet. You're going to love it. But for now, this is the Two-Headed Nerd signing off.
You've set the bar really high.
Oh, don't worry. Are you kidding me? It's so easy. These idiots will listen to anything.
Wisdom out. Eat it.